TNT Radio wants to know what you really think. From COVID-19, the Ukraine conflict, the persecution of Julian Assange, corrupt government, the WEF, digital IDs and digital currency, the Great Reset, the disassembling of the West, and the destruction of the world as we once knew it. Your opinion matters. It's time to get on our soapbox and tell us what you really think at TNTRadio.live. Upload a video, some audio, or drop us a note on TNT Radio's soapbox. Lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's news talk, TNT Radio. You're with Jeremy Beck on today's news talk radio, TNT.
Hello, it's Thursday, the 26th of January, and it's Australia Day, which Nicola Charles and I will discuss later in the show for our open line talkback session, which will start in half an hour. But firstly, we have some breaking news on the Ukraine war from John Helmer, the longest continuously serving foreign correspondent in Russia. He's the only Western journalist to direct his own bureau independent of single national or commercial ties. He first set up his bureau in 1989, making him today the doyen of the foreign press corps in Russia. Born and educated in Australia, then at Harvard University, Helmer has also been a professor of political science, of sociology, and of journalism, and an advisor to government heads in Australia, Greece, the United States, and Sri Lanka. Today, Helmer is one of the most widely read Russian specialists in the business world for his news-breaking stories on Russian base and precious metals, diamonds, mining, shipping, insurance, food trade, and business policy. Welcome, John.
Thank you for having me, Jeremy.
Great to have you on my show. And you have just written an article, which I have read, which is at your website, johnhelmer.net. The headline, Blinken concedes war is lost, offers Kremlin Ukrainian demilitarization, Crimea, Donbass, Zaporozhye, and restriction of new tanks to Western Ukraine if there is no Russian offensive. Fascinating development. Please tell us more, John.
In a quick nutshell, Jeremy, here's what happened. Yesterday morning, the Washington Post published an article on the opinion page by a man called David Ignatius, quoting an interview he'd just had with the U.S. Secretary of State, Antony Blinken. In this piece, Blinken, who's been the leader of the war party in Washington, offered some fundamentally new American concessions to Russian security concerns and to the Russian objectives of the military operation. He disguised it, camouflaged it, and covered it with much of the propaganda that everybody here is familiar with. But the propaganda problem is the one that that the Washington Post, Ignatius and Blinken have attempted to solve. The problem is, how do you lose a war, or how do you not lose a war, in which your propaganda insists you're winning? How can the United States military and its policymakers not run away as they did from Saigon in 75 and from Kabul last year? What they've done in this particular piece, to which I'll come to in a minute, President Putin replied within hours. What Blinken has done is used Ignatius in what's known in the newspaper business as an op-ed piece. David Ignatius I've known for many years. In my Washington days, he's a dogged, little-minded fellow who has always been trusted to repeat exactly what the State Department, the White House, and the CIA of his time have been telling him. He's had a career lifetime as a toady and a loyalist. Mm-hmm. He retired from full-time Washington Post journalism, so this occasion, he's publishing what's called an opinion piece. That makes it deniable. That means that Blinken's meaning can be misinterpreted, interpreted correctly, or denied by Blinken himself. That protects the Washington Post. It's not a piece of journalism.
Interesting there, because if you look at journalists writing opinion pieces of this nature, I often wonder whether the journalist actually wrote the piece, or did the CIA or another intelligence agency wrote it and it's put in the journalist's name. Does that sort of cross your mind sometimes in these sorts of stories?
Not with David Ignatius. David Ignatius can scribble for his own name. He has, in fact, met with Blinken, and Blinken's told him these crucial new things. It's not certain that Ignatius understands what Blinken was doing. Blinken was reflecting, and I have no doubt that Ignatius copied it all down correctly and reprinted it in the Washington Post. What Blinken is doing is reflecting terms of a deal that result from a serious factional fight in Washington, between the Joint Chiefs of Staff led by General Milley, who's gone public already by saying the war can't be won. The Ukraine army cannot do more. That's the polite way of saying the war's been lost from Blinken's point of view. Now, Blinken is probably the most psychopathological secretary of state in the United States, at least since Hillary Clinton took the job. He hates Russians. He has hated Russia since his grandparents left the Ukraine two or three generations ago. He's accompanied in Russian hating by his two deputies, Wendy Sherman and Victoria Nuland. But he has now said Russia can have security interests which the United States will agree to. And the United States will agree to negotiate directly with Russia without the Ukrainians in between. You can read exactly what Blinken said on the website. But right now the issue is, how does a psychopathological Russia hater and proponent of the war party in Washington and in Europe offer terms which the Russians could trust? Because the Russians have no reason to trust anything a U.S. official has written down or said, not since James Baker offered the not one inch for NATO to move east many years ago, and certainly not since 2014, when Chancellor Merkel and the French President François Hollande have admitted they were intent on deceiving Russia to buy time for the Ukraine. Is this breaking offer by Blinken an attempt by the United States to buy time to head off the Russian planned offensive within basal weeks and get the use for the Ukrainian forces of the Abrams tank and the Leopard tank? This is a question that President Putin answered a few hours after the Blinken statement was published. What I'm looking for it now, and I can't suddenly find it, what Putin said in a meeting with university students yesterday was that that the military operation was to defend the motherland, the large and the small motherland, and to defend from threats to Russia from adjacent historical territories. Those are the phrases he used. On the one hand, you can interpret what Putin has replied as saying, we will accept a negotiation on terms which protect Russia from threats in the adjacent territory known as the Ukraine. At the same time, Blinken has offered what he called demilitarized status in the Ukraine. That means no arms pointed at or threatening Russia's principal new territories. And Blinken clearly states what they are. The concession is a U.S. territorial concession of Crimea, of the land bridge between the Crimea and the Donbass entirely, and the Zaporozhye and Kherson regions, which have already been incorporated into Russia. This is a very significant territorial concession, and you can ignore all the propaganda and the camouflage that Blinken added to his statement. This has never been said by an American official in a position of power before.
It's a huge concession, but to my mind, it seems to be buying time, and they don't really intend to concede that territory. Do you see that too?
That's clearly the Russian suspicion. It's clearly the Russian suspicion, and there's no way of knowing whether you're right, Jeremy, and you may be right. There's no way of knowing until the Blinken and General Milley and Secretary of Defense Austin can agree with the Russian side to on a framework for talks between the Americans and the Russians directly, face-to-face, without the Ukrainians present. That formula is very tricky. At the same time, we have to add what Blinken offered January 25, so it's sort of half today in the U.S. time and half tomorrow for the U.S. What he offered was essentially a deal that if the U.S. supplies and delivers Abrams tanks, the British the Challenger tank, and the Germans the Leopard tank, the U.S. will see to it that these tanks are not brought out of the west of the Ukraine. They will not be moved east on condition that the Russians agree not to launch their planned general offensive in the Ukraine and thereby attack and destroy the tanks where they're located after they cross the Polish border. The railway hubs, the railway lines, the cantonments of troops, the airfields, the roads, and all of the logistical structure that exists in the western Ukraine that the Russian Air Force and the Russian Armed Forces have so far allowed to function as these arms, equipment, men, and NATO staffs have all come in from Romania or Poland. So that there is an exchange there, and the exchange would materialize if Russia postpones the start of the general offensive. And there are already plenty of voices in Russia saying it's time to stop waiting.
I think so, John. I think there are many, many voices, but we do need to take a break now, and I think we can get a better audio line for you too during the break. This is TNT Radio.
You should hear what Rick Munn's talking about.
New Mexico and the U.S., the Democrats are proposing that all new houses that are being built going forward must have solar panels and charging stations in each new home, drastically increasing building costs. So whether you like it or not, you know, this issue of smart meters comes up and say, well, I'll never get a smart meter, you'll never get me. But maybe the house that you're buying has one pre-installed, or the landlord that you're renting off has one installed, in which case you can't really do anything about it. So if you're saying, well, I'll never have a charging station because I'll never have an electric car, for example, in New Mexico, if you're buying a house there, if the Democrats get their way, you're going to have solar panels whether you want them or not, and you're going to have a charging port for your EV whether you like it or not, and you're going to pay for it whether you like it or not. That's the way that this thing works. It doesn't matter if you want it, doesn't matter if you like it, doesn't matter if you disagree with it, they're going to try and force it through. And unless there's serious kickback from this is actually going to come to pass.
Locked and Loaded with Rick Munn on today's News Talk TNT Radio. A better business tip from TNT Radio. One reason people tune in to TNT Radio is often because they're loyal to a specific show or personality. Our personalities have been a part of people's daily routine, and people continue to tune in. They trust TNT Radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live. Billionaire globalist corporations will own everything. Homes, factories, farms, cars, furniture, and everyday citizens will rent what they need, if their social credit score allows. Lighting the fuse for freedom, TNT Radio.
Jeremy Beck back again, and my guest is John Helmer. Now, John, I see that the Russians would be very wary of this development, maybe somewhat encouraged, because at the end of the day, the United States and the NATO side have conducted negotiations in bad faith, such as with the Minsk agreements. So how do you think the Russians would be viewing this development now?
As you said, Jeremy, you said it quite rightly, with extreme caution, wariness and suspicion. But let's be clear that the president of Russia has already responded to what Blinken said. And in his statement, he clearly said, we will hold Lugansk, Donetsk, the Donbas area as a whole, and Kherson and Zaporozhye. And I again have to quote him. He's saying, our goal is to protect the people and Russia from the threats they're trying to create for us in our own historical territories that are adjacent to us. We cannot allow this. So it's extremely important that when young people defend the interests of their small and large motherland with arms in their hands and do so consciously. The small and large motherland can extend to include Odessa and in the south and Kharkov, Poltava, Sumy in the north. So the issue of how to define the new territory that doesn't threaten Russia, the way in which demilitarization might work in the east, east of the Dnieper River, east of Kiev, might work, and how to make sure that the Ukrainian Nazis, who aren't included in this proposal and who will never stop fighting Russia for the 1939 reasons they had, how to do that is yet to be negotiated. So Russians will see this Blinken proposal as a turnabout, as a retreat by the worst, from a Russian point of view, warmonger in Washington. Now, he's had to make compromises with his own people, with the Pentagon. He's also had to make a compromise with the German Chancellor, Chancellor Scholz. He's basically said in the piece, through the Washington Post, we have to preserve the cohesion and the alliance of the NATO states. That's an admission that if Russia launches its offensive and it succeeds in destroying the Ukraine, what remains of the Ukrainian army and the NATO weapons on the Ukrainian battlefield, the loser will be the NATO alliance, the German weaponry, the German policy, and the US policy in Europe. It's the first concession I've seen, though, as I say, camouflage, dressed up to look to mean the opposite. First concession I've seen that the United States government is deeply worried at losing its protectorate in Europe. And that's brand new. Now, if you're on the Russian side, I agree with you, Jeremy, you're going to say, is this a simple buying time tactic? Or is it a strategic concession by the United States that indeed the whole entire policy of threatening Russia by the expansion of NATO, the development of the Ukraine as a gun platform, all of that, is it a concession by the U.S. that must stop? Now, you've got a huge problem, not in Russia. You've got a huge problem in Australia, Greece, all the little countries that have signed up to all the nonsense propaganda against Russia. And you've got a problem with the British and the French, who probably weren't briefed by Blinken in advance of his statement. You've got a problem of holding the alliance in cohesion if what's being negotiated is the opposite of what everybody's been reading in their silly newspapers.
Yes, yes. And I see that Russia's recent announcements of hypersonic weapons and nuclear-powered torpedoes could well be part of this decision, because Russia has very, very sophisticated military hardware. Do you see that these announcements from Russia in terms of their latest military hardware would have something to do with this latest development?
Blinken actually says this. in a guarded way, in a camouflage way. So I urge listeners who are live, or listeners who will see this on the internet, or listeners who can read the text in the Washington Post or on our website, you will see that, pardon me, that Blinken has conceded that the Russians will have a reserve force of strategic bombers, tactical and nuclear weapons, and what Blinken's phrase is, certain high-precision weapons. Those are the weapons for which the U.S. has no counterpart or match. They're the ones you just mentioned. So basically, if the English language used by Mr. Blinken has any meaning at all, and Ignatius can, at the very minimum, scribble down what he's been told to publish, if the words have meaning, the words mean the United States is offering that if Russia refrains from destroying the Ukraine and destroying the capacity of so-called of NATO weapons, the Abrams tank, the Leopard tank, the HIMARS rockets, and so forth, if the Russians will refrain from destroying them, the U.S. is willing to come to a new balance, military balance in Europe. Now, that's an extraordinarily new development. But let me just add one little footnote everybody's missing. The money markets already know this. How do I know? Go to the stock market summaries of Wall Street Journal or the Financial Times or Dow Jones and put in a search for Lockheed Martin, which makes HIMARS, or General Dynamics, which makes the Abrams tank, or Rheinmetall, the German company, which produces the Leopard, or ThyssenKrupp, another major listed, stock market listed, German arms maker. And what you'll see in the last 3 or 4 days is the money markets, people who risk money, not propaganda, not mouthing off. The money markets have all cut the share prices of these big arms manufacturers. Now, what is the market trying to tell the propaganda rubbish in the Murdoch media and in the so-called independent media of the world? The money markets are saying there's no future profitability in this war with those weapons against the Russians. Now, that's money talking, not mouth.
That's important, and I'd just love to see the end of this military industrial complex, because you can't win World War III. These wars are just for geopolitical gains, and it's all an end game to destroy the sovereign nation state. Where do you see this war going from now, John?
Well, Jeremy, it's a very good question, and we don't have very much time to discuss it. Maybe we'll
just
come
3 minutes.
But
yes.
Until this morning, or yesterday by Russian time, US time, and today by Moscow morning, until now, I had a different view about what was happening. And what I was able to report of the evidence, what I doubted was the capacity of the U.S. General Staff, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and the Pentagon under General Austin to effectively neutralize the warmongering position, the war party, the hawkishness of Blinken, Nuland, and Sherman, the Russia haters. But now I'm convinced that if Blinken told Ignatius, who published in the Washington Post this piece, then I can see a different possibility. That's the possibility that Russia and Russians negotiators, military ones, not simply civilians, that's Sergei Lavrov, the foreign minister, and his diplomats, Shoigu, the defense minister, and the chief of the general staff, Valery Gerasimov, these men must now negotiate the terms that Biden has put on the table. And this changes the future. It certainly promises to reduce the killing, and the killing is devastating for the Ukrainians. It doesn't stop, by the way, the special military operation. Right now, the Russian army kills, destroys, and removes the Ukrainian threat to the Donbas every day at a rate of approximately 200 to 300 casualties a day. It's terrible. For that to end, there's now a possibility on the table. Blinken put it there. Whether he means to put it there, or as you said, is simply buying time to preserve himself in power in Washington, to preserve Biden's presidency before 2024, whatever he's doing will now be tested, but it'll be tested first on the battlefield. Will the general operation start, or will it be delayed? It'll be tested in the West. Will the Abrams and Leopard tanks move any further than the fields between Lvov and Kiev, if they arrive? Will HIMARS continue to be delivered and deployed in the East? All these technical questions, battlefield questions, there are lots of people, certainly Russian military correspondents lead the world in disclosing what's going on the battlefield. The people who copy what the Russian correspondents have to say, that's Colonel, ex-Colonel McGregor, ex-Major Ritter, ex-Private First Class Berletic. These Americans are regurgitating what the Russians are telling you is happening on the battlefield. So we can watch now, in the next few days, what happens on the battlefield, and then come back to your question, what's going to happen next? The best answer I can give you right now is, I don't know.
It's a fascinating story, John, and thanks very much for your time. It's been great to have you on the show. People can find out more about you at johnhelmer.net. Is that the best way?
That's the best way. Thank you very much, Jeremy.
Thanks very much for your time. We'll go to the news headlines right now. This is TNT Radio.
TNT Radio News.
Get the news. The news.
Matt Boylan here with a look at your TNT headlines. France has announced it'll withdraw its troops from the West African nation of Burkina Faso after receiving a formal notice to leave the country. US President Joe Biden has announced Washington will now start arming Ukraine with America's most advanced battle tanks, and the United Nations is calling for troops to be deployed in Haiti to restore order and curb a surge in gang violence.
Our lines are open. From the U.S. and Canada, call 1-888-201-6425. From the U.K., call 033-0024-1026. And from Australia and New Zealand, call 1-800-670-3100. Free speech is alive and well on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Jeremy Beck back again, and Nicola Charles joins me. Hello, Nicola.
Hi, Jeremy. How are you? Happy Australia Day, and happy Australia Day to all our listeners. I hope you've had a lovely time.
Yes, happy Australia Day, everyone. And on that subject, Nicola, there is a lot of debate going around. Should Australia Day be moved to another day or just keep it on the 26th of January? What do you think? We'd like to hear your views. Please call in. And those numbers you just heard there, if you missed those numbers, just go to the tntradio.live website and all the talkback numbers are up there. But it's an interesting time, Australia Day. I think my personal view, and I don't care what your view is, I just want to hear it. But yeah, my personal exactly. view is let's keep it the same until we get a republic. And if we do get a true sovereign nation state, and our head of state is not King Charles, we could, on the day that we become a republic, then we can make that Australia Day. But at the moment, I see that the 26th of January is the day that the first fleet came to Australia, and that has transformed Australia from where it was for many, many thousands of years in the Stone Age through to European settlement. And of course, that's had its tough times, and it's been tough for Aboriginal people, and it's been tough for white Australians. The convicts really did it tough. They got whipped with the cat of nine tails and everything. So we've had a fairly dark history. Let's not pretend it's not dark. But at the same time, there's a lot of good things going for European civilization too. I certainly wouldn't want to be living in the Stone Age, Nicola.
No, and look, I don't think there's any country that isn't in Europe that's been newly inhabited by Europeans that hasn't gone through some kind of terrible power struggle. And the thing is, I don't agree. I don't think the actual date is that important. Saying that, I'm not Australian. I'm British who lives in Australia. So perhaps it's different if you are here. A lot of my friends who are Australian do feel like the date is important. They believe it's also important for the First Nations people. They see it as the date that they received protection under the law. So I'd be interested to hear from any First Nations people if they would agree with that. From everything I've heard, apparently not. I think the essence of why I like to celebrate Australia isn't reliant on a date. And of course, there are so many people who say that, you know, Christmas Day, December the 25th, isn't the day that Jesus Christ was born. So, you know, there's arguments surrounding dates with lots of holidays. But for me, it's about the celebration of Australia and not the date in particular. So I would be interested to hear from Australians why you think the actual date of January the 26th is important, and also from First Nations people or anyone else who thinks that by moving the date, that would somehow act as reparations for unpleasant histories that have gone on. So, yeah, I'm sort of on the fence about it, really, Jeremy, but I would be interested to see what Australians say.
Yes, please tell us your views. It's always good to hear differing views too. I like not someone just to completely agree with me all the time. It's good to challenge
I'm your girl,
ourselves.
Jeremy.
it's good to challenge ourselves with different views. Yeah. Because my views have changed over the years, Nicola. I used to be a monarchist when I was a young lad, but I've been a Republican for quite a long time now. You know, I thought at the time when I was young, well, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And that was the sort of thinking I had. And the more I studied history, the more I realized, well, why do we have a foreign head of state? And there are so many arguments there. But there are many discussion topics that we need to cover today. And if you can call back and tell your views on that, please call in. But there are a number of other subject matters that are so important right now. We're seeing the excess deaths. It's really quite horrific what's going on. And Nicola, I sent you those figures from the Australian Bureau of Statistics, and really quite horrendous. Yeah. You have 16% more deaths than historical averages. That's in 2022, there were 144,650 deaths that occurred by 30th September and were registered by the 30th of November, which is 19,986 deaths more than the historical average. That's a huge number, nearly 20,000. Yeah. So that's quite horrific, and that's Australia, and that's the official figures. That's from the Bureau of Stats. There are other cases in Europe, everywhere. You've seen them, Nicola. And now they're still... The ATAGI, the Australian Technical Advisory Group on Immunisation, they're still considering the fifth dose of COVID jabs. How insane is that, Nicola?
Well, things are obviously going in the direction that they wish in order to recommend something so recklessly, in my opinion. I think the thing to remember as well, and I always remind myself of this, is that we are living in an increasingly corporatized world. And so when you look at statistics, and they talk to us about data and science throughout the pandemic, you do tend to forget that those numbers and those statistics and that data that they're busy clocking up are actually real people. So we're talking about 19,986 people. That's sort of, you know, a stand at the MCG of people just gone. And this is the 16% in Australia. I think it's higher in the UK. It's 20%. But this 16% in Australia has actually been pretty constant as well over the last short period. And so, again, you know, I'm just concerned that there's no explanation. I'm concerned that because we're becoming corporatized and these figures and these numbers don't seem to mean anything anymore, people have forgotten what it means to be human, people in bureaucracy and our leadership for sure. You know, and when you talk about Australia Day and, you know, why did we have an overseas monarch? I think it's becoming clearer to everyone that what we had was an overseas owner. And I don't know if any of the listeners have ever watched a short story which has a cartoon that goes with it on YouTube called The Jones Plantation. It's very, very interesting. You should definitely take a peek at that. Because when someone owns the plantation, let's say, as a metaphor, giving you the option of, you know, the leader dressed in blue and the leader dressed in red doesn't necessarily mean that you're free. It means you're free to pick someone they've decided to offer up. And so it would be nice if we were free to choose someone who could be offered up. I think we all believe that we can. I don't really think that we do. And I'd like that to be someone more like Gerard Rennick, someone who cares about people, who cares about the suffering, who's happy to stand up there and take as much flack as is needed, because he's trying to highlight what everyone else is clearly trying to brush under the carpet. How can you brush mass death under the carpet? And they wonder why people band around words like genocide, phrases like mass murder, depopulation, and they call these people crazy. Well, then explain to us why we're not crazy, please. Explain to us why all of those deaths of all of those people were necessary and what caused them, because most of the stats show, Jeremy, that less than 5% of that extra death was caused by COVID. So it's caused by what exactly?
Exactly. And that link that I sent you, and anyone can just do an internet search for the Australian Bureau of Statistics, excess deaths. It's under the Provisional Mortality Statistics latest release. And they admit it that many of these deaths are not from COVID. And they've got all these different lines and charts. And you can look at the charts and they're quite horrific because you've got these lines of what the baseline is, what it would be expected to be. Then you've got the additional COVID. But then on top of that, you've got these essentially cause unknown. Well, we know what it is. What else could it be? What else has changed? And we know there is a scientific reason. There's a causal link. And we've been speaking to all the experts on TNT Radio who show the heart problems. And the heart problems are in that data, Nicola. It's really quite horrendous, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a horrible way to die. And we know what they do. They basically, you know, deplatform. We're sort of used to it now. They've normalized it for us, and that's very much a theme that people use with abuse, is they normalize abuse, drips and drips, slow drip of abuse, and eventually you get used to it and you don't realize you're being abused. Well, it's been the same with all these deplatforming of important scientists and doctors that have been warning about this, that are having forums. There's an enormous conference coming in February, open to the public, and Dr. Peter McCullough is going to be there. I believe it's sold out in sort of 3 days. And you know, it's something that we've kind of gotten used to, but the fact that after everything we now see and everything they told us to look at, which was these statistics and this data, the fact that it's not being addressed, well, they've either severely dropped the ball and citizen journalists have picked up that ball and run with it, which seems what's going on. Or again, it's deliberate. And when you couple that up with, you know, a recommendation of a fifth booster, for what exactly? I mean, you know, those who have not had this jab are faring better, and I believe they're referred to as the control group. And, you know, I'm one of those people in the control group. And why haven't they contacted us? Why hasn't there been a government agency or a health department that has sent out letters saying, look, you know, it's our understanding that you're not vaccinated? Because they can see, because it goes straight into your MyGov. It's on all your sort of all of your health cards here in Australia. What are they record, Jeremy? Help me out. The little
Card. It's on my Gov record. Yeah. I've checked my Gov record, and it says I have not had the COVID jab.
No way, yeah, does
no
it?
No one has contacted me either.
So okay, so why don't they contact us, Jeremy, and say, how have you fared? Have you been sick in the last 12 months? Have you had a flu? How many times? How severe was it? How many days? They're not interested in the control group. And I remember we reached a point in this pandemic where I think it was after they'd rolled out the second vaccines. And I remember it to the day, I should have written the date down, where very much the narrative changed and the propaganda changed, and they sort of stopped immediately chasing the unvaccinated. And it was a feel, it was a shift, it was so palpable. And they suddenly focused on those who had taken one or two and wanting them to get more. And, you know, I found that to be really, really suspicious as well. So it kind of makes your blood run cold because, you know, if it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, something very dodgy is going on. I would love to hear from people. I would love, because I lost my cousin in the UK a couple of days ago, suddenly, 2 years older than me. Give us a call from USA or Canada on 1-888-201-6425, the UK 033-0024-1026, or Australia and New Zealand on 1-800-670-310. Please tell us about your experience with this, because I'm pretty sure the control group have been left alone, and I'm just wondering, Jeremy, if they're going to come for us in round two. And that's why Mr. Gates was traveling down to Australia.
It's a big worry, Nicola. I'm sure that this is not the end of it by a long shot. And if there is another so-called pandemic, are we going to go through this whole routine again? It is a big worry. We do need to take a break right now, and then we'll be back to discuss more of this and much, much more. This is TNT Radio.
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
I'm sure most, if not all of you, know the Aretha Franklin classic, A Natural Woman, released in 1968. Here she is singing it for President Obama and the First Lady at the Kennedy Center in 2015. Well, a group called Transcultural Mindfulness Alliance tweeted the following last week. Aretha Franklin's 1968 song, Natural Woman, perpetuates multiple harmful anti-trans stereotypes. There's no such thing as a natural woman. The song has helped inspire acts of harm against transgender women, and they requested it be removed from Spotify and Apple Music. The story went viral, including major publications, but the same group tweeted this out on Monday. Based on the sheer ridiculousness of the content of this page, how could journalists not comprehend this is a parody, satire site? The New York Post claims the group issued a follow-up tweet denying they are a parody. The link to that tweet does not work. Let's just assume that they are a parody site and this was satire. It's still only a matter of time before someone goes after the song for real. Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg for TNT Radio.
When you're high, you feel different. You think different, you talk different, you draw different, you listen to music different, but you probably knew that. Problem is, you also drive different, and not in a good way. That's why driving high is illegal everywhere. So if you're high, just don't drive. Make a plan to get a sober ride. Because if you feel different, you drive different. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Like Bob Marley said,
get up, stand up, stand up for your right.
From big tech censorship to calling out government tyranny, TNT Radio has the guts to say what you're thinking and gives you the platform to be heard. Call the open line anytime in the U.S. and Canada. Call 1-888-201-6425. In the U.K., call 033-024-1026. And in Australia and New Zealand, call 1-800-670-310.
Stand up for your right.
Free speech has a home on TNT Radio.
Jeremy Beck and Nicola Charles back again. Now, Nicola, there was another story I found interesting. China is resuming group tours to 20 countries from the 6th of February, but Australia is not on the destination list. Russia, Thailand, New Zealand are among some of the many countries which will be able to receive group tours, but not Australia. Zhang Qing, owner of Great Wall Travel Services in Melbourne, believes it is in retaliation for Australia imposing additional COVID testing requirements on visitors from China. Interesting story. I think there's a fair bit of politics in all this, but Australia is missing out on some important tourism business here. What do you think, Nicola?
Definitely politics, but politics is rapidly becoming theatre, isn't it? So I'm pretty sure that Australia and China have a very reciprocal relationship. I know that because my husband's in the building trade and there's a lot of back and forth with imports and exports to do with building. And that continues, you know, whatever's happening on the global stage. So I do worry when I read these stories about how sincere this is, and it's just a Phil Collum inches, I'll be honest with you. But I find it really odd that they're not sending group tours when ordinary citizens from China have been able to travel and have been traveling a lot from January the 8th into Australia. And I just also find it a bit strange generally that we went within a matter of weeks and not many weeks, considering, you know, it's 2023 and this all started in 2020. Just a few weeks ago, the images coming out of China about the state of the country and what it was experiencing with COVID were really quite severe and quite terrifying to look at. And then all of a sudden it turned around, and on January the 8th, people from China could just hop on a plane and come to Australia. And I remember thinking, well, if it's as severe as they say, why is that being allowed to happen? So the group thing I don't really understand, but honestly, Anthony Albanese, when is he going to put a team together to investigate in Wuhan the origins of this? I mean, the only excuse you could possibly have for not doing that is because you already know. Perhaps you shook the hand of the origin the other day. I do find it a bit odd that this conversation is even being had. I mean, until that sort of really bad outbreak happened, apparently, in China, I really thought we were at the back end of this. And I don't know if it was an outbreak or if it was just the Chinese government being quite severe on citizens, you know, because we know that that's something that they do. I think quite soon this little spat will be over and groups will be able to come to Australia. I can tell you now that, you know, I have a lot of Chinese friends and neighbours, and nothing has changed for them. There's plenty of back and forth. I'm sure they don't care whether they're in a group or not. If it's being used to say that there's a spat with Australia, then fine. But yeah, absolutely. You're right, Jeremy. Tourism companies will be suffering. I have two friends who previously worked in tourism in Australia, and I can tell you they made an awful lot of money, as you can imagine how many people want to come here. And they've both since moved on to completely different career paths because the tourism industry has fallen down. So again, how could Albanese, how could any government allow this to happen? Australia is one of the most beautiful countries in the world. People should be coming here. And so they should be doing diplomatic measures to make sure that happens. But diplomacy seems to be a bit old-fashioned, doesn't it, Jeremy, these days?
I think so, Nicola. I mean, we have quite a tense relationship with China, and that's been a problem for the last few years. I think it's very regrettable because China is Australia's biggest trading partner. So yeah, it harms Australia, it harms China. And we can't win a war if we ally with the United States over a war over Taiwan, if that was to occur. I think it's a very dangerous relationship, and it doesn't make sense to be antagonizing China, as much as China has made a very, very big mistake in these lockdowns and it caused enormous suffering to its own people. I just look at those photos of all these people stuck in the apartments in China, and it makes me very sad. In fact, I went to China a few years ago. I had quite a good holiday over there just before COVID, and just about everyone lives in these high-rise apartments. They've moved a lot of people out of the... Yeah. Well, some do, and it's quite sad, you know, that happened. I believe partly because of the lockdowns, people died in that fire. They moved a lot of people out of the agricultural, the rural areas, and built, they're just building nonstop in China with all these apartments. So they're all stuck in an apartment, and that is a horrible way to live your life, stuck in an apartment.
But you know, that's what they're trying to do here, Jeremy.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. We're tending to move more down that path here in Australia in terms of our real estate. Mm. You know, we're getting stuck into smaller and smaller boxes, and I think that is part of the erosion of the middle class that we discussed earlier on today. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. It does worry me because, as I've said before, Australia, compared to other countries, is really quite underpopulated. Now, there's some that would argue, well, Australia only has a certain percentage of its country that's arid enough to sustain life in any kind of decent way. And I understand that, but there's still plenty of space. And so trying to get people, Australia is very much, for me, I lived in California for 7 years, very much a sort of suburb culture, right? You pick your suburb and then you jump into the city for a nice dinner or for business. So the idea that everyone would live in these smart cities and that Melbourne is indeed going to become a smart city, I'm assuming it's going to be a very sprawling smart city because what are you going to do with these masses and masses of suburbs, which are very evident when you fly into Melbourne? You know, it's a bit like flying into London. It's huge. It's clear. You can see it's clearly huge. And so you're going to find it very hard to get people to just move into the city like that. I have a friend who has an apartment that he bought for $3 million on South Bank, and he can't sell it. He can't give it away. So right now, where we are in history, people don't want to move into the city, mostly because it's a ghost town. All the shops and cafes and restaurants are closing because obviously the pandemic destroyed them. So the more they try and push for us to become less Australian and, you know, saying this on Australia Day and living in our lovely suburbs and our communities and push us to go into these heavily surveilled smart cities, I think the greater the push against it might be. Look, it might work for China. I don't think it's going to work here, Jeremy.
Yes, I think it's a worry. We're losing our standard of living. And I'm not against apartment living, but you have to have a decent apartment, a very spacious apartment. The problem is a lot of real estate, it's just based on cramming as many people into the smallest bedrooms as possible, and it's not much of a life. And when you have a lockdown, it's horrendous. And you just got to feel for those poor Chinese who are stuck in those apartments. And in terms of the entire economic crisis that we're facing, Nicola, there's another story of interest. The PM should know the inflation rate is punishing families. And true, I mean, look at the cost of living now. Do you see now with the cost of living, inflation, petrol, food, all these things, and then you also have business leaders actually calling for real wage cuts. Do you see this as ending in a major class conflict, Nicola?
I'm sure they would like to create a class conflict. They certainly like to create conflict between other groups, vax and unvax, you know, all kinds of things. I just think that Albanese is deliberately asleep at the wheel. He looks asleep at the wheel. He doesn't look overly concerned with anything, I'll be honest with you. When I was looking at this story today on Sky, he sort of looks like he's sort of, you know, acting a serious face. I'm seriously thinking about doing something, but then he seriously doesn't do anything. You know, we're reaching a point, it's sort of dereliction of duty. I mean, is there such a crime as sort of economic terrorism? Because, you know, it's neglect of Australia. Now, if you were to neglect your child in this way, you would lose your child. And yet we've got a whole bunch of bureaucrats who are severely neglecting Australia. And if they're not neglecting Australia because Australia is not what we believe it to be, but they are neglecting citizens. And there's a hell of a lot more of us than there are of them. So I'm surprised that they think they can get away with this over a long period of time. I'm surprised that they are getting away with it over a long period of time. But I'm very, very surprised that they would say they want to cut wages for people who are already facing higher mortgage prices. Well, they know what that will do. People will lose the homes that they own. And perhaps that's what they want, because we seem to be becoming more socialist. I hate that word. It mm-hmm. makes rents higher, so no one can afford to rent. We'll literally be living in tent cities, I think, Jeremy.
I think that's a danger, and it already is happening in some areas. I know there are certain spots, even in Australia, it's limited, but there are some spots where people have literally been forced out of their homes. They can't get into the rental market, and they're living out of their cars or even in tents, caravan parks. It's quite common to live in caravan parks. And it seems to be happening more and more. And it seems to be just a war against the middle class that we've discussed about. And I see this is a problem in the Western world. We saw in United States with the Rust Belt, and that led to the rise of Donald Trump. And, of course, the Americans were very angry. I was in America about 20 years ago, Nicola, and there's a lot changed since then. But even back then in 2001, when I went to the United States, I saw some massive poverty. We haven't had that big gap between the rich and the poor here, but it seems to be a growing problem. We've only got about 1 minute left. Just a quick thought on there.
Yeah, I think it's a crying shame. I think this has been a plan for a very long time. And yes, absolutely. When you look at cities like Detroit, I mean, can you imagine if a city like Melbourne became like Detroit? And as I said previously, we've got restaurants, bars, businesses closing. The for lease signs are wall to wall down every street. It's absolutely heartbreaking. If they think this is a better option and this is their one world government, then they can shove their one world government, because it doesn't work for me, Jeremy.
Yes, exactly right. Very well said. I think they can shove it, and we've got to be very angry about their plans, because it cannot happen if civilization is going to go forward. News is next. Thanks very much, Nicola. Great to talk again. Coming up now for the news, and Rick Munn will be after then.